My gaming week has been waiting for Super Mario RPG all week, and then getting it on Friday. My gaming weekend has been playing Super Mario RPG all weekend. It's been a good geek week. Super Mario RPG, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, award season announcements, Half-Life updates,
no, not three,
and so much more. It truly is the most wonderful time to edge still closer to the end of the year. This is the Voice of Geeks intro. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to tell you about most of these things and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now in the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio. We are live once again tonight, episode 982 of our show, November 19th of 2023, or 19 November, as we might have joked about many years ago. I'm Rob Roberts, and I'm here with you all tonight with my co-hosts. Say hello first off to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers, who is not coming through for some reason. Hello, Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
On mute.
Okay, there you go. Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm irritated, apparently, with whatever's going on with the system.
Yeah, fun. I love the shirt that your VTuber is wearing with Bad Cat. I like the outfit that your VTuber is in tonight. It's cute.
Thanks, I made it last night.
Wonderful, wonderful. Also say hello, joining us every week. Say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hi, Loki, how are you?
I'm good.
We have tech problems all over the place tonight because your video is frozen for us. Because I was going to say, why do you just have a static Simpsons bowling logo behind you tonight?
Well, it's because XSplit VCam has been stupid for the last, I don't know how long.
I guess since a lot of people take the next week off of work, a lot of our technical equipment decided to do the same. What can you say?
Well, this has been doing this for weeks now, so yeah. I don't know. It's a combination between the software just sucking and also between, I think, Windows and assigning like device IDs to USB devices. Like It seems like every time I get an update that it resets everything. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably part of it.
Well, if you want to join us live to point and laugh at all the tech fail, you sure can, because we do tape live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, where we do tape live right after Bobby Blackwolf show on Sunday nights. You starting to say something, Jamie?
Yeah, actually, I know I need to do my system upgrade and upgrade my OBS, so for me it could just be an OBS issue.
Maybe. All right. Well, let's get into some news. We don't have as much news this week this was a big week for game releases, as Jason kind of talked about in the intro there. Super Mario RPG, I know, is taking over a lot of people's gaming weeks this weekend. Sadly, not mine. I had some other stuff going on. I didn't get around to it yet. I plan to. Probably something I'll get to in the next week. But, you know, that was with that and the releases this week, the rest of them, it's really kind of the last big releases of the year. I think we have an Avatar game out in December. I don't think I'd put that in the big release category, even if it is based off a big movie.
Yeah, Ubisoft does weird December releases for some reason for their games.
I mean, Mario RPG was really the last big release of the year. So now it's kind of like, okay, finally, this year of just really behemoth game releases has been put down in front of us. We now, you know, can take a look back at the year 2023, which has really been a fantastic year for gaming releases. Not such a great year for gaming studios. We kind of have to juggle both of those things, and we'll talk a little bit more about that a little later in the program. But we can talk about celebrating, you know, some of the great releases of the year this year with the Game Awards. And the Game Awards, of course, been running for a few years now, trying to be to the video game industry what basically the Oscars is to movies. I would say maybe more what the Grammys is to music, even though I can't stand the Grammys. But, you know, it's trying to go because it's a little bit less formal than the Oscars. But maybe something like, or maybe the Emmys, I don't know, or the Golden Globes, it's less formal. And then again, they've had their own set of problems over the years. I don't know if any of those are.
I prefer the Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls of must-see TV. No, but obviously Jeff Keighley started the Game Awards a few years ago to really try to bring a little bit more pomp, circumstance, and of course, you know, recognition to the industry in a little bit more of a formal way. We had Game Award shows before. The G4 network had that G4ia thing. Spike TV did something, and I don't even remember what it was called.
It was the, I think they just called it like the Game Awards. It was like the Spike TV.
Yeah,
I remember what it's called.
And it'll show you what a great impression it made on all of us that we can't even remember. OVGA, says Bobby Blackwolf.
Oh, that's right. So that sounds familiar now.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously those were trying to be a little bit too much, you know, what they think the people want to see. And the Game Awards, you know, love him or hate him, Jeff Keighley, I think, has a much bigger pulse on what gamers kind of want to see. And that's a good mix of the awards, the speeches that go with them, and the big trailers, the must-see, you know, game announcement trailers, because, ooh, you know,
baby, ooh, love those trailers.
Early to, and as it's no, because we talked about it at the end of last week's show, right at the end of last week's show, Grand Theft Auto 6, almost certainly one of those trailers we're going to see.
Hopefully. Big but, like, deal. Even still, like, the stuff that's unexpected is also really cool. Like I remember when we first had the trailer for No Man's Sky, it's like that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's like, what the heck is this? Yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah. I do. Well, I even think just as recently as last year, like the Death Stranding 2 trailer, because a lot of the rumors were pointing that Kojima was doing a horror game. And so people were kind of expecting that. And then what we kind of got instead was very different until that moment you see Norman Reedus. And then it's like, oh, this is Death Stranding 2. So, you know, there's been some pretty pretty exciting announcements over the years. And it looks like this year we'll get some more. So, but tied in with that is the awards themselves. And some people kind of get excited about the awards. Some people can kind of give or take them. I don't know if excited is the right word, because how do I feel about the awards? I like that they happen. I do. Even though it's very hard to judge art in this kind of way, I do think Jeff has set up a good show to recognize the industry and to give a little clout for, you know, like an award and that type of thing. That is, yeah, that's cool. So, you know, do they always get it right? No, but neither do the Oscars, neither do the Grammys or any of those shows get it right. So let's talk a little bit about what did get nominated this year and try to talk a little bit about what all goes into that. Loki, do you want to kind of highlight maybe some key categories for us? I don't think we need, because there's a lot of categories. I don't think we need to do
them
all. Some of the key categories.
Yeah, let's see here. So some of the categories, obviously Game of the Year. One of the contentious, not contentious, surprising, I guess, things about Game of the Year is that Starfield is not nominated for Game of the Year. So we have Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, and even Alan Wake 2, I think, are pretty, like, that makes sense. Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Let's see, some of the other cool stuff.
Well, can we comment on that first? Because this is such a contentious category. Well, it is. You mentioned like Starfield gets ignored in Game of the Year. I'm not surprised at all. That game, yes, it has its fans,
and buggy,
but it also has its detractors and a resounding amount of mediocrity for a game like that. You know, and again, I did play a little bit of Starfield. I mostly enjoyed it. There were things about it I didn't like, and that kind of ultimately drove me away to go play different games. So I can't sit here and say I'm shocked that it didn't get nominated for Game of the Year. The most shocking omission to me is an indie title. I would have thought that something like Sea of Stars, Cocoon, something in that those lines sneaks in here. But I'm not that shocked. Like when you mentioned these six games, I'm like, I'm not that shocked. Have I played all these games? No. Do I feel like I listen to people enough and have a pulse enough on social media and all that that this list of six surprises me? No, it doesn't. And I think this seems like a fine and to be expected list. That being said, I think it's going to be the biggest non-surprise when Baldur's Gate 3 walks away with it.
I hope it does. That'd be amazing.
Well, you know, and I see a lot of great things about that game winning too, especially when you talk about a lot of the industry stuff that's been going on this year. Larian is a studio that really took the time to get it right, didn't crunch, made sure they put out a polished product that was very rich without the DLC. Here's the thing. I can say all that and at the same time recognize, some of you may remember, I attempted to stream that on my channel. I made a big deal out of it and was like, oh, Shane and I are going to do multiplayer. I canceled it after two streams, and not like for a lazy reason, but for a I'm not having fun reason. And I know that might sound shocking to say, but you know, if you go back and listen to what we were saying, I said, this game is almost too open-ended where I'm able to make these mistakes live on air that are not fun to watch me go and recover from. And I'm not feeling like I'm moving forward at all whatsoever in this game. So I don't really want to play this game until I have an FAQ that could just walk me the whole way through the game. That being said, my own person, I can still have that personal opinion of my issues with it, and at the same time recognize, damn, this is like playing a BioWare game at its best, which is no, you know, if you consider the history of that series, you know, there's no surprise there. But it's got great character development, great voice acting, great story. It literally feels like you're in the middle of a tabletop D&D campaign. So they got so much right with that game.
It really does to me.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was agreeing with you. I started the game, mm-hmm. and I've been busy. But every impression I've got down to the dice rolls and the narration of just being in a really good game.
Yeah, exactly. And I think especially now at this time, when a lot more people have been getting into tabletop game, I think in part because it was a really good thing to do virtually during COVID, and especially the explosion of tabletop podcasts and so forth that come along with that. I think now is that's just really like the perfect storm of this really well-made game at the right time, where I just don't see how Baldur's Gate 3 doesn't win. I would say if there's any like dark horse or whatever you want to call it, maybe Alan Wake 2, just because it seems to be riding a lot of recency buzz, and there's a lot of like artistic decisions in that game that seem to be very, very well done, including the soundtrack, that could propel Alan Wake 2 to a surprise that would be very like last minute driven. But I really think even that is a shot in the dark, and the other four. And I cannot fucking believe I'm sitting here saying this about Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. And I'm sure some of you are going to take issue with it. Not a chance. None of those other four are winning. I'm sorry. I will be shocked. I mean, anything can happen. You know, we've had shock Oscar wins before, but I would be absolutely shocked if one of the other four won. Shocked. Because that would mean somehow the Nintendo vote didn't split. That is actually the most surprising thing to me. I don't think we've had two Nintendo games nominated in the same year since, I think it did happen one other time. Oh, it was Zelda and Mario. It was when Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey went up against each other. So it's taken those two coming out in the same year to go up against each other again. And that's, I actually think Wonder is great. And I think they're both great, but I am still surprised to see them both nominated, because usually Nintendo kind of splits those type of awards. So. Anyway,
let's see. Other categories we could talk about. So adaptation. So this is basically games to other media like TV, movies. So we have Castlevania Nocturne, which is a Netflix animated series, Gran Turismo, The Last of Us, the Super Mario Brothers movie, and Twisted Metal. Well, I can tell you one of those is certainly not going to win. That would be Twisted Metal.
I was a little surprised to see that one.
I have not heard good things about that.
Yeah.
Sadly, a little too early for, or I said too late for the Scott Pilgrim anime, but that may be something that's next year.
Well, Scott Pilgrim also isn't based on a game. Scott Pilgrim was a game, but it was, a manga first.
Yeah, that's true, but I could see them doing it. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Best independent game. So we have Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of Stars.
Sorry, I'm going to make you go back because I do want to comment real quick on the adaptation thing, because there was a spirited debate about it in our Discord over at vognetwork.com/Discord. If you want to join the conversation throughout the week, and this is one of the conversations they were talking about, because we had one listener who was pretty passionate that Mario is the best adaptation and ought to win, and some other folks that are like, dude, there's no way The Last of Us doesn't win this. And I can completely, like, you know, again, I really try to put myself in other people's shoes. That's, you know, for all the Rob Stradamus jokes I've been getting this year. One way I try to act, make the prediction as best I can, is try to look at things from other perspectives and so forth. And I totally see why somebody would like something like the Mario movie. It was a good movie, and it's very, it's family friendly. It's cute. It's fun. It's self-referential to video games. I get it. That being said, I also look at something like The Last of Us, and the way that that is breaking through to, I think, an audience of people, an artistic, you know, if you want to say the Oscar voting category, the Emmy voting category, The Last of Us is breaking through in a way video game adaptations just don't fucking do. And I think is, I think most people of a certain age at this point understand video games are fun. Video games are fun. They're silly. They're entertaining, right? I don't think everybody in that same group also understands video games are also art, and video games can tell very good, moving, emotional stories. But The Last of Us has now pushed that through in a way into that more mainstream medium that I don't think video game adaptations have done yet. So that's why I think The Last of Us, easy win in that category. Easy, easy win. While I can still respect the perspective of family fun popcorn should be worth something, yes, but it's going to be Last of Us's year. So,
yeah, I think so. I mean, I like the Super Mario Brothers movie, but I could also see that it's a very, like, it's not going to be touted for its writing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a good adaptation, but it's not like a great movie. It's a good movie, mm-hmm. but it's not like, you know, one that you go back to like, wow, this is, you know, incredibly written, incredibly animated, you know, such a great story and great characters and all that stuff. It's just very surface.
Well, if you have an 8-year-old at home, it's something you can put on at loop to entertain him.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
No,
it's
of course
just,
not.
It's just, you know.
There's nothing wrong with entertainment. And there's nothing wrong, like, literally, why on earth would anyone ever watch either a soap opera or pro wrestling, because those are essentially the same thing. Why do people watch either one of those things? Because sometimes you just want to shut your fucking brain off and be entertained. Okay. There's nothing wrong mm-hmm. with that at all. Loki, you're frozen again, by the way. I can't see your reactions and it's killing me. Sorry.
I don't know. I don't know what to do with this. It's just being stupid.
That's all right.
I have to keep refreshing it and be like, hey, remember there's a camera attached to this. And yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
All right. Anyway, sorry. You were starting to read another category before I cut you off.
Yeah. Let's see. So, best indie game.
They're talking about this in chat right now. I gotta.
Yeah, there's contention here too. Yeah. So, Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of Stars, and Viewfinder. And the problem here, I think, that people have had is Dave the Diver is, Mint Rocket is owned by Tencent, I believe. So it's like, well, are you really an indie studio? I think that they're treated like an indie studio.
It's Nexon,
in the sense
by
that,
it's Nexon, not Tencent.
Oh, Nexon, yeah.
But it's a massive company. And actually, if you want to take that one step further, it was either the producer, the director, somebody made a comment on Twitter that essentially said this isn't an indie game. It's intentionally set up to look like an indie game, but they actually like have a tweet out there that is like, this is not an indie game. Now, for what it's worth, it won't win. like, again, you know, I realize a lot of things can happen, but it won't win. So for those of you that are taking issue to it, realize it's not going to win. Cocoon or Sea of Stars will, one of those two, and probably Sea of Stars, one of those two is easily going to win. But certainly that nomination in that category could have gone to somebody else. So I think the onus is going to be on Jeff to better define what that means in the next year. What does it mean to be an indie? Does it mean you have a certain amount of money or less circulating around, or it's, you know, I'd be very curious to hear him better define what is that other than what it seems to be right now, which is a vibe.
And a vibe.
What makes an indie game? A vibe. Because that's what Dave the Diver was going for, was that vibe. I'm not knocking the game, but
it's a good game.
When they come out and say it's not an indie game, it was just a vibe. That's a problem. Anyway. Next category.
Let's see. Next category. We'll do these two because at least the first one's not necessarily my cup of tea, but best mobile game. So they have Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis, which was that the MOBA game? Like the, was that one that they like, no, I don't think this is the one that they shut down, the live service one.
No.
Honkai Star Rail, Hello Kitty Island Adventure, Monster Hunter Now, and Terra Nil. And then best VR AR game.
Wait, because you know I got something to say on everything, Logi.
I'm sure nothing about Monster Hunter Now. Of course,
well, no. I mean, obviously, I've been playing quite a bit of that game. It doesn't mean I don't know. It's hard for me to judge the criteria of what makes a good mobile game. I play very few of them. I will tell you why I think Monster Hunter Now is actually a decent candidate, because it's something, again, unique to the mobile experience. I'm not so sure a game like Final Fantasy VII Ever Crisis, I'm sure it's a fine game. What is it really bringing that's unique to mobile? And I'd like to see the games judged a little more on that. But that doesn't mean I think Monster Hunter Now is a perfect game. I certainly don't. I have my own issues with it, but I'm entertained enough, I guess. I do like, honestly, Monster Hunter Now, best multiplayer above some of those other games that got nominated for me. Swear to God.
It didn't get voted for best multiplayer, because that would go to Baldur's Gate 3, Diablo 4, Party Animal, Street Fighter 6, or Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
There's the other game I'm shocked that didn't show up in Game of the Year, Street Fighter 6. I'm actually legit shocked that was not in more discussions when we talked about Game of the Year. And I really think Street Fighter 6 is a perfect example of a game that got lost in 2023, which really sucks for some people. So I'm glad to see it there, and I think it ought to win. And you all know I love Diablo 4. I stand that game a lot harder than most people think I should. I can say all that and completely recognize multiplayer is actually, I think, its weakest part, because the leveling system is not designed as smart as it was in 3. So I actually don't think Diablo 4 ought to win best multiplayer. So go Street Fighter 6. Go ahead.
What else do we have? Let's see. How about best action game? Armored Core 6. We have Dead Island 2, Ghost Runner 2, Hi-Fi Rush, and Remnant 2. I would love to see Hi-Fi Rush get that.
I think because Hi-Fi Rush got a surprising amount of nominations. And, you know, when that game first came out, people were saying Game of the Year, but then, you know, the rest of 2023 happened. But I think it still got something like 5 nominations or something like that. For all the talk about the Microsoft hate in the, you know, Game of the Year or whatever, Hi-Fi Rush still did very well for itself, considering how much hype went into building up that game, which was literally none. It was a stealth release. So that came out in January. So that's still very well done for that.
I don't see Dead Island 2 getting that for sure.
I don't think any of the games get it, sadly.
Ghost Runner is kind of a little bit more indie. That might be interesting to see. Armored Core 6, I could see. Let's see what else. How about best RPG? So that's where we get Baldur's Gate 3, Final Fantasy 16, Lies of P, Sea of Stars, and Starfield. So that's quite a lineup.
Is there any doubt what wins in that category? Is there any doubt? I
mean, yeah, it's going to be Final Fantasy 16, nope, but like, or Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate 3. You're easily. Yeah. Let's do the performance, and then that's probably the last one we need to talk about.
Performance? Best performance, we have Ben Starr for Final Fantasy 16.
That's right. By the way, that was the first, very first slide. Very first thing shown in the presentation was Ben Starr getting nominated. I said, here we go. We're setting the tone real good for 2023. That's all I need. A Ben Starr speech. I'm happy to see it. Please.
Cameron Monaghan for Star Wars Jedi Survivor. He's actually pretty good too. So that would be, I'd like to see either one of them. Idris Elba for Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty. We have Melanie Liebert for Alan Wake 2, Neil Newborn for Baldur's Gate 3, and Yuri Lowenthal for Spider-Man 2.
I think it really comes down to Ben Starr and the voice actor for Asterion in Baldur's Gate. It's between the two of them, because they both just won an award at a comparable ceremony overseas, but Asterion was best supporting, and Clive was best leading, or whatever you want to say. So I think it comes down to the two of them. I wonder if Ben Starr's very smart social media presence doesn't help him take this. You know, it's interesting because the fans only get 10% of the vote. The jury votes for the other 90%. But this is one where I could see that that 10% makes a difference. But I also see, I also think Baldur's Gate has just as many fans as Ben Starr does. So I think it's going to be a tough call for many people. But I think there's going to be people that kind of are swayed towards Ben Starr because he has played the social media game so well since. Because think about it. Ben Starr's voice acting career, he has like one well-known thing on his resume. One. And look what he's turned that into. He's very, very smart. I'm going to give him that. And he can very well take this award. And I don't think anybody would complain. I think even the Baldur's Gate 3 fans would say, like, look, if we're going to lose to anybody, it's going to be Ben Starr. So, and that sucks because there's actually a lot of other great talent in there too. I forget the character name, the gal they added in Alan Wake 2 that she voices in that game. Apparently is a great character, but it's just like, unfortunately these other characters are just like, it's coming down to those two. They're just going to get lost in the Ben Starr and, you know, Asterion debate. So that's what it is. Yeah, actually Questbuster brings up a great point. I'm surprised Ralph Ineson wasn't nominated too from Final Fantasy 16. Or how about Diablo 4? Because he was also in that game and did very well. I thought he was great as Cid. Yes. So this is interesting that we don't consider people's body of work with this award. Because maybe if we had considered what Ralph Ineson did this year, what all he did this year, he actually would be up. He had some, keep in mind, Final Fantasy and Diablo 4 released like weeks apart. And he played memorable characters in both of those games. That's a good year for that guy. So it's a little surprise. Yeah, I'm going to say it's a little surprising to not see him in this list. Not that I would want to take anybody else off of it. So anyway, it's going to be an interesting year. We'll see. SSG 100 Matt
more weeks. Yeah.
In chat has been looking at some of the like the betting, you know, I guess there's seedy websites you can go to if you want. I shouldn't say seedy. It is legal in some places, but I don't know how I feel about all that stuff. But you can go look at what the odds makers are saying about these sorts of races. And SJ 100 Matt says the betting odds for Ben Starr to win are pretty high. Bobby Blackwolf says, hopefully this means at least Ben Starr will present an award. I just want Ben Starr on stage. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of the MTV Movie Awards and how they used to do like parodies and things that would actually have big celebrities in them. Like, you know, you ever seen some of those skits that they would do on the awards? They'd have, you know, celebrity. I would love to see Ben Starr in the Zelda movie. Like they should show him auditioning for the part of Link in the Zelda movie. I think it would be very funny. Especially because good. Link has always been a silent protagonist. So I would love to see what the hell Ben Starr is going to do with that. That would be fantastic. So Mike Deft is pointing out the Alan Wake 2 character I was trying to think of is Saga Anderson. I haven't played Alan Wake 2 yet because I'm told do not play it until I play Control.
Is that related?
Well, apparently it's more like it. You will understand Alan Wake 2 without having played Control, but my friend is more like, Control is the best video game I've ever played, and if you don't play that before you play Alan Wake 2, I'm going to be mad at you type of thing. So, yeah.
I understand.
But apparently there is benefit to having played both. That is also...
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a universe there. So I'll have to check that out. So Mike Def says, Control is not needed to understand Alan Wake 2, but it is connected because of DLC. Questbuster says there are references, but you don't absolutely need to play it first. So there's that. Ooh, Bonds 006 with a good point. The Halo TV series got no mention. Ouch. Wasn't that last year, though?
I think that was last year. Wasn't this year.
Yeah, but you know what? I had a very similar reaction because I was like, where was the League of Legends anime? Everybody went crazy. Why is the League of Legends anime not? It was because it won last year. Because my sense of time is so fucked these days.
Well,
I can't remember.
To be fair, like there are so many spinoffs of League of Legends nowadays. I think there is even maybe multiple animated series. So it's very possible to like miss something.
Which is Arcane, by the way. I can never remember the name.
Yeah, I remember Arcane, but I swear that we talked, was it what release dates last week even, or this week, there was another spin-off game for League of Legends. So there's a lot of spin-offs there.
Yeah. But hey, if the quality is as good as what Arcane apparently was, we can see why. Anyway, let's talk about the games we have been playing this week. Thank you for running that down for us, Loki. December 7th is the date of the awards ceremony. Mr. Black Wolf and I, and potentially my co-hosts here, need to talk about who might want to get together and stream that live for live reactions, not just of these awards, but of these trailers, because there's going to be some big things announced. So I know.
Please. I need it. Well, I need it in my blood.
Loki, here's the thing. Even if you don't get Grand Theft Auto at the Game Awards, you know you're getting it in early December. They did confirm that. So you're going to get it. It just, we're thinking it's going to be at the Game Awards. So
I mean, it would just make sense.
Right. The math is mathing. So anyway, stay tuned to our socials. We'll let you know if there's going to be a live thing. I just have to check my schedule at work and make sure, because I swear to God, the award ceremonies start earlier and earlier every stinking year. Because don't they do like a pre-show at like 4:30 that leads into the actual show at 5, because it's like 3 hours long? I'm also like, I'm not going to lie. What day of the week is December 7th? A Thursday?
It's usually a Thursday is when they do those. It is a Thursday.
There's a part of me, y'all, that kind of wants to go. Like just once. Just once. Like just do a silly trip, drive to LA at night, go to the Game Awards, drive back the next day. Like just do something silly. Like, and I'm not gonna lie, I mean I know tickets already went on sale, but I don't think we've ever seen that auditorium full, so they're probably still on sale. I'm debating it, y'all. I'm not gonna lie, I'm debating it, so we'll see. I'll let you know next week. I'll make a decision next week. All right, let's move on and talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week, for sure. Dark Sakura, as always, we'll start with you.
So I've been playing, of course, Dead by Daylight. I've been playing a little bit less. I mean, just with my voice is a lot better, but it's still kind of cutting out on me. I've played a crap ton of Disney Dreamlight Valley offline as well as online. It's actually just become my go-to for when I need to chill. I did another night of Rudra no Hiho, or Legend of the Rudras, or sorry, Treasure of the Rudras, which is the last RPG that Squaresoft produced for the Super Nintendo. It's very good. Graphically, it does show that this was like the top of what they had learned for 16-bit graphics. I've also made a character on Baldur's Gate 3, but I don't like how she looks, so I'm gonna start over. Because you know that's how I do.
Well, that's
the one thing I don't
also,
like about
also very Shane of you. He does the same thing.
Well,
yeah.
Well, yeah, but I'm older than Shane, so I was doing it first. I have to say though, the one thing I don't like, it is the same thing I don't like about the first Dragon Age series. Is that I would rather just have conversations with characters and not have to pick from a list of topics and never hear your character unless they're a party member. Mm. So I've never liked that part of it. excuse me. I've been just dabbling in a few other things. I've played some pinball. I picked up a couple of games that I don't remember what they're called, but they're on Mac. Yeah, that's been kind of my week. I still haven't been feeling super great, so it's just been playing cozy, relaxing things.
All right. Loki, we'll go to you. How was your gaming week?
It's been Minecraft. It's always Minecraft. Now, this I've got an episode out yesterday, I think. And I've been working on the big build on Razorworks server, so I've been doing that. It's like a 60,000 block giant statue thing, so that's mostly done. And then I finished up my storage room and the episode for channel 64. Now I'm gonna start this week, now that I have time off, I'm gonna be sitting down to design the first attraction at the theme park that I'm building. So it's designing all the systems for the ride. It's probably gonna be a log plume ride. It's using boats and water streams to push the boats around. And then I have to figure out, like, I want to have it where you, like, target shoot stuff. Kind of think of, like, the Buzz Lightyear ride a little bit, you know, something like that. So it's designing that and the facade for it and the gates, you know, the entrance for the park and stuff. Lots of stuff, lots of design stuff. I'm trying to do that, and I've got about 3 episodes worth of footage for RaiseWorks server. I think that once I'm done with this build, I'm done. Maybe the server. I haven't decided yet. There's not really anything for me to do anymore with it, and the grind for this build has been pretty taxing, so I don't know if I'm going to necessarily just stick around to just build farms and stuff, but we'll see. I could probably do that on Channel 64 instead, and that'd be a lot more worthwhile for me. But yeah, that's what I've been working on.
Nice. All right, my gaming week. So in all honesty, like a lot of weeks, it's been a lot of Diablo 4. I think because we're going to get an experience buff for Thanksgiving week, we're getting, what do they call it, the Echoes of Lilith or something like that. It's going to be like a 35% experience and gold buff throughout Thanksgiving week. I will probably finally hit level cap and clear the battle pass this week, so I'll finally feel like I can focus on other games too. But I'm still enjoying Diablo 4. Like my Barrage Rogue is very, very satisfying. I love just spraying monsters down with the, you know, crossbow. It's great. So yeah. I've been enjoying a lot of that still. I have been playing other games too, though. I've been dabbling a little bit in Overwatch 2 with a friend of mine, playing that. I do not like that special mode in the game right now, the 3v3 that's like K-pop themed, which is like getting tickets and all that thing. It's not the aesthetic that I don't care for. That's whatever. I just can't stand the roster of heroes that it's limited to, because I like to play support, but my two least favorite support characters, Brigitte and Kiriko, and I know people love Brigitte, okay? I don't. I love having her on my team. I don't love playing as her. Are like the only ones you can pick from. And it's just so chaotic. I didn't love the special mode. That's all. I was like telling my friend, I'm like, can't we just play regular 5v5 so I can be Batiste or Moira or somebody else besides Kiriko, who I don't like healing as her. So it's just, yeah. Also, I joined Jamie on one of her streams briefly for like an hour playing Dead by Daylight. So that was cute and fun and unexpected. So that was my Dead by Daylight playing for the week. Let me talk, though, about some like gaming related things I kind of did. So number one is I want to plug somebody else and their streams. And I'm going to plug my friends over at A Tale of D20s here on Twitch, who I think I've done some videos here on the network with Omar from over there, Taleweaver, before. And I know we worked together on a DragonCon project last year. We did a LGBT plus panel for the virtual DragonCon. Throughout the year stuff last June. So he actually asked me if I would come in and do a tabletop RPG, sit in and be a player in a tabletop, because they are doing a bunch of games in the Magpie universe. They're doing a thing called Magpie Madness. And so they asked me to play a game called Masks, which is basically like teenage superheroes. So we got to like create our superhero. Yes. And I've committed to the whole thing, and I created a character. And if you want to know more about it, you're just going to have to go check it out. So I will post the link to the archive video in our chat if you want to bookmark that and check it out later. I would also just urge you to check out A Tale of D20s here on Twitch. Give them a follow, show some love, because there's a lot of other campaigns that I'm not in that are going on that are a lot of fun. So yeah, I had fun with it. So I say that because I don't do tabletop a lot. That's the first time I've done a tabletop game in a very long time. So I was a little nervous going into it, because I'm like, I'm not worried about any of the people, but I'm worried about it being broadcast live on the internet when I don't know what I'm doing. But the DM, I can't, no, GM, GM, they say in this, did great. And created a very welcoming and safe environment. And all the other players were super cool, and we had a fun time. So I just want to give a shout out to them and thank them for having me. I will be back next week for the conclusion of the story. It was a two-episode commitment. So we did this week, and we're going to do one next Sunday. Outside of that, I want to briefly mention this, because in the gaming world, and Loki, you referenced this earlier, it's not directly about a video game, but a lot of people are very curious about this Scott Pilgrim show that just showed up on Netflix. So it is not Scott Pilgrim versus the World. It is actually Scott Pilgrim. What did they actually call this? I can't remember the name all of a sudden. Oh my God. Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. That was the name of it. this is the show that they have. It's some people are saying it's an anime. I don't know if it was actually animated overseas or what, but whatever. It's that style. It's very influenced by that because, you know, it's originally was a manga. I don't watch a lot of TV. You all know this, but my friend kind of wanted to watch it. And I was like, all right, let's watch it. And the first episode was kind of doing its thing. We were like, okay. And then at the end of the first episode, we were like, okay, wait. Okay, we got to watch more. And so we watched more, and we ended up watching 5 episodes. And honestly, we would have binged the whole thing if it wasn't like, it's like 12:30. And if I don't drive home now, I'm going to fall asleep. And yeah, so we just agreed like, okay, we'll get back together and binge the other 3 episodes later. But I'm actually finding I'm really enjoying it. I don't want to talk too much about it because it could get spoilery, and I don't want to do that and ruin it for people that haven't seen it. But I will just say I've been pleasantly surprised with some of the creative directions they've been taking with it. And I guess this is really polarizing people. Some people do not like it. I think it's fucking clever. I think it's extremely fucking clever. Personally. Orange Wright in chat says definitely watch the movie or read the book first. I agree. I think you should have knowledge. Keep in mind, it is not called Scott Pilgrim versus the World for a reason. But you should have a familiarity with Scott Pilgrim versus the World, be it in the manga series or the movie, before you watch the show. That's all I'll say about that. I think it's neat. I can't wait to see how I'm surprised they got all the voices to come back. They're all in it. I mean,
yeah, that was really cool.
You can tell some of them are older, but that's okay. It was still fun. So, all right. With that being said, that was it for my gaming week. I just wanted to give a positive reaction to that because I so rarely actually sit down and watch movies or TV. So I thought you all would be proud of me that I actually watched not just one episode, but 5 episodes of Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. So, all right. Let's move on. Let's talk about what is going on in new. We have kind of a lighter news week this week. Again, as we, you know, we're going into the end of the year, less games coming out. I am disappointed in myself that I did not play Super Mario RPG. However, my husband just got back from Costco, and here's my 4. There's no codes on this. They're all on the back. Here's my 4 $25 Nintendo eShop cards so I can get another voucher and buy myself Super Mario RPG. So that'll be happening soon. And I got a set of PlayStation cards too for when PlayStation Plus goes on sale inevitably on Black Friday, or I think it might already be. I'm going to load up on that as well and not feel bad about how much I'm paying for it, because I at least got a discount from getting $100 worth of cards for $90. So that was my Thanksgiving gift to myself. All right, let's get into gaming news. Loki.
So yes, the Embracer Group has basically laid off 900 employees in just this quarter. So according to the most recent sales report from the Crystal Dynamics and or from the Embracer Group, they said that the company has experienced a 13% increase in net sales between July and September, so for quarter two of their fiscal year. As part of that, though, they said that around 900 people were laid off as part of a reduction in headcount that equates to 5% of their whole workforce. I'm assuming that's because they're purchasing a bunch of companies and redundancy and whatnot. They said they also reduced the number of projects being worked on and focusing on improving the projected return on investment with PC and console. They said that they would like to put it on the record that special thanks to the people that have left Embracer in the quarter. But that doesn't really say much other than, you know, what they're doing with their employees. I don't know. I don't like how Embracer is kind of buying up all these companies. It feels to me like EA, you know, how we had like a lot of the great studios and then EA came in and gutted them all.
Yeah.
So it's like EA 2.0 again.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, obviously Embracer Group, I think, was setting up for these much larger aspirations, which, you know, if rumors are to be believed, was some sort of Saudi Arabia deal or something, I don't know. And then that didn't happen, and now it's like, now all these companies that they bought are having to pay the price of what was a really bad business decision in many ways. Yeah. It just sucks to see that the people responsible for that sort of decision.
Of course, yeah, the CEOs.
That's... It's gross, and that's the thing that I just as much as we should be celebrating all the great games that came out this year, it's this type of news that just leaves the most stank in the room. And it's not just Embracer. Every fucking week on this show, every fucking week for the last 6 months, we've had some layoff that's happening, and it's sad. I mean, it's what, okay, it's 900 here, but how many hundred was it last week? How many hundred was it when we were talking about Bungie? How many hundred was it? You know, like, it's that we're talking about thousands of people in this industry have lost their job in 2023. And that sucks, because usually this industry is very good at taking care of each other and, you know, filling in other positions and hiring people where it makes sense. How are you going to take care of thousands of people?
Well,
not every story here is going to have a happy ending. And I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, you don't, and of course, you know, can't punish them.
Well, except for one who's leaving on January. Well, no, you know what? No, I can't even say that tongue in cheek. He's getting a golden parachute. Fuck him. Like, I can't even say something sassy about it. That sucks too.
I mean, John Riccitiello left, so I guess there's that. I mean, that's hardly anything.
Yay, I get one.
I mean, that's about it. But yeah, like, and you know what? And I say this, like, I am not counting Bobby Kotick gone until he's actually gone.
Yeah, there's that. And there's the fact it's a golden parachute. So does it even really know for intents of wanting to see CEOs bear the brunt of these bad decisions? No, it doesn't actually make me feel better at all what's happening to Bobby Kotick. I mean, yes, I'm glad he will no longer be in the industry if all goes the way it should go, but it doesn't offset all this other terrible crap from other CEOs and bad decisions and other, you know, high level bad business decisions that are causing the money to just hemorrhage so bad. They have to decide, welp, guess we just can't have this studio make this game anymore. Or welp, guess we have to tell this studio that we're putting their game out at the end of the year, whether it's done or not, Kong. Like,
or even like, it's not just calling, even like, was it the recent Walking Dead game was also terrible too. A lot of games that are just not good that are being put out because they're being rushed by these publishers. Game Mill though is its own thing, because Game Mill's always been a shovelware company. So that's not, I'm surprised that people are just picking up on that now. It's like, no, they've been like that for, I mean, when I was selling video games, like,
fair. SG100 Matt in our chat says, I wonder and hope Jeff will open the show referencing these layoffs. He, of course, won't attack these companies, but I hope he dedicates these awards to those folks who sacrificed their time on these games only to get laid off. I would like to see that too, but knowing that there is such a huge financial contribution that does end up coming from these same companies, unfortunately, not bloody likely. But maybe there is a way he could wordsmith it. I like your idea of dedicating the awards to the folks that made them, whether they're still in the industry or not. Like, I think there is a very clever way you could word that and get away with it. I think we will be lucky if we get a tweet, unfortunately. I think from Jeff Keighley, I think you'll be lucky if you get a tweet on that. Sorry. But I would like to see that too. Don't get me wrong.
Don't suppose he's going to call out Yves Gaumont for, not addressing this. No,
of course not. Questbuster in chat says, Embracer was so aggressive in expanding over the last 3 years, borrowing, leveraging, and spending billions to rapidly build an empire, almost without regard for potential bumps in the road ahead from the high-profile failure of titles like Saints Row to the Saudi deal collapse. And who's going to pay for that? And that's... I guess we have. Can I get on my soapbox for a minute? Can I rant about the person I rant?
Soapbox away.
Okay. Can I rant about the person I rant a lot about on this show? Motherfucking Elon Musk. My God. How? Yeah. Motherfucker. And there's so many things I could say about him.
Just don't get me started.
I know. But can we just for a minute look at the fact he paid $44 billion for a company that is very clearly, by his own hand, way less than half that value now. If even that, I can't even believe that company's worth $1 billion at this point, to be quite honest. And I would love to see an external audit tell us what that company's really fucking worth, because I would bet it's worth pennies on the dollar for what he paid for it by his own hand. Period. And you this is, especially with him, this is a situation where you can say this wasn't the temperature in the room. This wasn't the industry moving in the other direction. This was literally your stupid fucking ass and your big fucking mouth that doesn't know how to shut. And I bold and underline this, the fuck up. Elon Musk has no one to blame for what has happened over on Shitter except for himself. No one. Who's going to pay for that money that he literally flushed down the fucking toilet that he brought through the front door the day he started at Twitter? Who's going to pay for that? Because people like that motherfucker never do it. Never pay a dime out of his own pocket. Never have to feel any burn or anything for anything. Speaking of burn, while he's flushing Twitter down the shithole, he blew up a fucking rocket this weekend. Thank God no people were on it. This guy is a fucking moron. Period. I can't stand him. And I can't stand the fact that he's not being held accountable for literally actively making the world a worse place. I hate him.
Don't get me started on his anti-Semitism.
I know when I talk about the by his own hand, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Tiger Claw says this is the guy who wants to send people to Mars, and he also wants to implant chips in people's brain. And if you agree to do this stuff, I'm sorry, not sorry. You deserve the big misfortune that's coming your way if you are dumb enough to buy what this guy is selling at this point. I agree with SSJ100, Matt. Send people to Mars, you first, sir. Absolutely. If this is something we need so badly, by all means, Elon, after you. Get off my planet, because you're not making this one a better place. I feel better. Do you feel better? Because I feel better. All right. Anyway, what should we talk about next? Oh, let's talk about the PlayStation Portal. Yes, it's a video game podcast, isn't it? Let's talk about the PlayStation Portal. The PlayStation Portal was a new peripheral that just came out this Wednesday. And people were kind of saying, why couldn't you have just made a new Vita, yo? Like, this device is meant for remote streaming. But people are interested in this. And who bought this new device that just came out on Wednesday? Scalpers, 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 because the world sucks. And scalpers have been getting their hands on the player. And this portal will cost, I'm getting this from the outlet Eurogamer, who says that the price over there is 199 euros. But eBay, of course, is putting listings over 300 euros because, again, scalpers, it's just a shitty. People turn to scalping sometimes. Here's the thing. The people that turn to scalping are the people that are getting laid off because Elon Musk is a twat, and all these other people that are in the industry that are making bad decisions. These people turn to scalping because they feel they have no other choice to make money and put food in people's mouths. So I'm very careful how much I do. I don't like scalpers. I don't like this whole thing. But I also kind of recognize the real problem is the people who create the demand for it, who ultimately in turn end up being the rich motherfuckers that have this type of dispensable income to be able to pay for it. So the people that buy this stuff are the real problem. And if you've ever bought a scalp product, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm talking about you. And I hope you'll make a better decision next time and think about some of these things that I'm saying. Anyway, there's a ton of people that are on eBay selling this. I didn't think the demand would be there for this, but
I'm surprised that they're not just stuck with this stuff.
The reviews for this are mixed, saying that the hardware is pretty good, but what's the point? It's a very limited type of appeal. It's not an actual PlayStation handheld. It's just another screen for your PS5 on hopefully strong internet. But anyway, if you can fucking hold off just a little bit longer, the PlayStation Direct store, at least in the UK, and I'm pretty sure it's a similar situation in the US, is saying we're working hard to make more stock available. Please check back on Wednesday, 22nd of November. The US version of the page is saying early December. So there does appear to still be chances to get this before Christmas. So if anything else, I will try to say, for those folks that are tempted for whatever reason to support scalping and buy one of these, I applaud Sony for at least going as far to say, if you can wait a little longer, you could probably still get one before Christmas. So I do like that they're trying to, you know, get people to not give in to the scalpers. And I hope it does work out. So anyway, I have no interest in the PlayStation Portal at all. And I'm disappointed give it zero functionality outside of what it does with the PS5. Like, why couldn't it at least be a fucking Vita on top of it? Why? Blows my mind.
It's just going to be e-waste here very soon, because it's only going to function for the PlayStation 5. And it doesn't work great all the time in the preferred environment, which is like, I guess, on your own Wi-Fi. Like, if you're planning on taking this remotely, like to a hotel or somewhere, and play your PlayStation 5 games, good luck with that, because it's not going to be a good experience.
Unless you're playing a point and click adventure or something that can move slowly with delay like that, you know?
What's the point then? Like, I don't know. Like, how many point and click adventure games does the PlayStation 5 have?
No, I know. You think of action and things like that. So, yeah. Anyhow, let's move on. Dark Sakura, what do you have for us?
So, there's a little thing that happened with the skins in Fortnite that has people feeling a little bit less than happy. So, without really any announcement about it, people found that there were skins that they had paid for that they can no longer use in-game. And specifically what it is that there are items that were rated 12 plus. So according to Epic, about 7% of the Fortnite skins can only be equipped in islands that are rated as teen level islands. But there are some people who most of, you know, the skins they have are, you know, those restricted items. Although, funny enough, one person posted a screenshot showing that all of the skins except Michael Myers were age-restricted. Only because Mikey doesn't have his knife.
Oh.
Like what?
Isn't
this is like the most violent character out there. There is some thought that Epic's going to go in and do versions that are teen safe by their standards that you can then use, but there's no confirmation about it. Epic says that it's working on something like that, but the confirmation isn't necessarily that it's happened or that they have any kind of time frame on that. So, I mean, it's a game where you hunt people.
Right?
It's supposed to be a teen plus game. So
I thought Fortnite was rated teen. It is rated teen according to their website. Why would any of the skins not, like, that doesn't make any sense.
I mean, maybe they're trying to change it to where they can make it kid friendly. Why?
You can't do that at this point.
This is ridiculous.
Re-rate it. It won't work like that. I mean, maybe.
And then
they're announcing
this business. They're announcing that they did it after they did the thing. So I don't understand the logic. I don't. It has to be some business suit person that made the decision, because we all know what happens when you get into, you know, high upper management, I guess. But
You have high upper. What was that?
You know what I mean. Higher upper. There's like a point where you get away from, quote, the people in the trenches, and lose that connection to what's actually going on, or people who don't really even understand the game itself who are trying to make decisions about it.
It's that. It's the line where the gamers stop and the businessmen begin. That's what it is.
Business people.
Yes.
Yes.
Business humans.
So.
But at any rate, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm kind of glad I don't play Fortnite. So
anytime Although I've ever played, it's only as Ariana Grande anyway. So who I imagine is E for everyone. So whatever.
And I'm pretty sure, though, that they got the whole deal of Myers running around with his keyboard, you know, pretending to be John Carpenter, was taken directly from the Samination parodies of Dead by Daylight, where John Carpenter follows him around playing his theme.
Hmm. Interesting. So, I did not realize he didn't have his knife in that game, which is so funny to me because
he should have his knife.
Well, yeah, because you run around collecting fucking guns in the manga. But I do realize there is a creative mode in the game, too. And I feel like this is where this is all actually. It's not like Battle Royale or whatever.
It is happening in creative mode.
Yeah,
right?
It's that
it's
part of it.
It's the creative island.
Yeah, I get
it's
it.
In
get
the,
it.
It's in the Fortnite Roblox section of the game.
But it is humorous to me that this is the same game with sniper rifles and shit, and like, you know, but heaven forbid Michael Myers has a knife. But I guess it just shows how strong that character is that you can imply the presence of a knife without actually showing it.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, well, he does have a screwdriver in DBD.
So
anyway,
let's move on. Oh, let's talk more about Epic.
Let's Loki. Do that. So apparently there's, you know, the whole Epic versus Google thing is actually now in court, their legal showdown, and we're getting updates around this that sound kind of crazy. So first off, it's been noted that Google hasn't really been keeping all the evidence that they are supposed to be retaining, all the documents. It says, Epic was allowed to tell the jury that Google may have destroyed or hidden relevant evidence. Epic's lawyers, they brought up how few Google chat logs have been provided during discovery, and even said that Google execs had possibly deleted chats and jokes about hiding conversations. Also saying that there was Google information governance lead Gennaro Lopez says questioned multiple times about seemingly missing chat logs and the company's policy of telling employees to chat off the record about sensitive issues. No, that doesn't sound legally dubious or anything. Of course not. And also said, you know,
I'm sorry. SSJ has like the comment of the night here in chat saying Google had their documents, but they canceled it after a few years of support.
Fair enough. Yeah. Sorry. We stored all of our documents on what was it on OnePlus or Google Plus?
G Plus or Google G-plus. Google Wave. They were all Wave. Google Wave documents. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. And it says you cannot guarantee the documents that were destroyed will contradict the testimony we're going to hear. And it says also during this case, you had the default setting to delete chats every 24 hours, correct? When they were questioning the vice president of apps and games. And then going back to that, Google CEO wasn't saving evidence as well. Back to that whole auto delete thing as well. It's drama, and it'd be interesting to see how that plays out, if that hurts Google in any way about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. Very interesting. I did not realize they were having a continued court case against Google. I knew about that.
That was settled,
thing. Yeah. Interesting. Epic's picking fights with everyone. All right. Well, somebody who's not picking fights with a lot of people right now is Naughty Dog. Well, I don't know. Maybe some people are kind of a little bothered by this. But of course, Naughty Dog is the studio that's brought us a lot of great hits, including The Last of Us and The Last of Us Part 2. And it was announced that a remastered version of The Last of Us Part 2 is coming to the PlayStation 5 this January. And unfortunately, it was a leaked trailer that showed up that had to be confirmed by Sony. So who knows if maybe they were trying to save this for a certain first week in December award show that was scheduled to show some trailers. But they had to confirm ahead of that. And this version of the game is going to come out January 19th, 2024 with improved loading times because, you know, PS5, 4K graphics because, you know, PS5. And integration with the PS5's new DualSense controller, because again,
PS5.
Yes. Yeah. So all those things are going to be things that are in the game. Also new in the game, No Return, a brand new roguelike mode, which allows you to choose your path through a series of randomized encounters. And you can play as unlockable characters that have not been seen before in the franchise. Are we talking like Crash Bandicoot?
That would be so jarring, and I would love that.
Me too. Like, if you're gonna go outside the franchise, make it funny. Like,
well,
just
if it's Naughty Dog, then that would have to be Ratchet and Clank or something like
no,
that.
No, I'll be fucking Nathan Drake or something. Like, it's not.
Oh, boo.
Or other. Come on. I don't know other Last of Us characters that you can't. Well, I guess they say outside the franchise. I don't know. You'll be able to compete in a global leaderboard. Also, the remastered version brings early versions of three levels that were not in the original game and commentary, which I forget is a thing a lot of games do these days. Director Neil Druckmann, narrative lead Hallie Gross, and actors Troy Baker, Ashley Johnson, and Laura Bailey will provide commentary throughout the game. I think also the most pleasant surprise about this is that if you own the game on a prior platform, you can upgrade for $10. I thought that was like, woo, I thought this was just going to be an excuse to charge $70 for the same game, which we know other studios do. But no, you'll be able to buy an upgrade version for just $10.
They have to at this point. Like, it makes sense because, like, if you think about it, they just released The Last of Us 2. Like, what are you possibly, like, updating graphically? It's like, that'd be like remastering Dark Souls 3 or something like that. It's like, well, or Elden Ring, like remastering Elden Ring. It's like, you just released this. What the hell?
There is a very important asterisk with that. So I want to make sure this is clear from the official PlayStation blog. And good news for existing owners of The Last of Us Part 2 on PlayStation 4. You will be able to upgrade to a digital version of The Last of Us Part 2 for just $10 at launch. You'll also be able to import your saves in the original game to the Part 2 remastered. Oh, I'm sorry. When I first read that, I thought they were saying you had to have a digital version of the last game, but it doesn't appear so. Apologies for that. I got a little tripped up on that. So you can upgrade to upgrade to a digital version of the remaster. Well, that makes more sense because you're just buying.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if that
probably still requires the original disc.
Yeah,
it's going to require the original disc.
Well, yeah. I don't even know if you would be able to. I would be willing to bet it's only if you have a digital version of the game, because how can they verify that you own The Last of Us 2
with the disc? You'd have to have the disc.
I mean,
play it.
if they do that, I mean,
that's what they do in No Man's Sky. You have the PS5 version. You just have to run the disc. Pod Culture in chat says they will just use the disc as a key of sorts. Yep, that's probably how it'll work. E3VL asks a good question in chat, going, why not call it DLC instead of remaster? Because they can put it on store shelves next to PlayStation 5s and sell it as a new game, because more people are getting exposed to The Last of Us thanks to the HBO series, and specifically it will be part two when that next season inevitably shows up, which they haven't even started filming yet, because there's been a lot of chat about who's going to play Abby, but they haven't officially announced that yet. But I think because the hype is going to be building around season two, there are going to be people that want to, now that the actor strike is resolved, they can have those conversations. I think there's going to be a lot of people that want to play the second game who maybe got exposed to The Last of Us through the series and maybe is are now revisiting it now. Mike Def says, I thought they did announce who would play Abby. There are strong rumors and there are articles going around about who is being talked to, but they have not confirmed Abby's role as of yet. So, but apparently it is somebody who originally auditioned for Elle in the game. So interesting. All right. Let's move on. Next story. Which is from Darsakura.
Yeah. So there is a big accusation against Sega about threatening to lay off a good portion of the unionized workforce as a retaliatory action. So basically, on November 6th, Sega put out a proposal to, quote, phase out all temporary workers by February 2024. A lot of people who were in QA and localization, and they sent this to the Allied Employees Guild Improving Sega, or AGIS. The union represents over 200 employees across marketing, sales, product development, and other departments. The layoffs would impact about 40% of the group, or about 80 unionized employees total. And instead of bargaining with the union, Sega just delivered the news directly to employees in a meeting, and also violated rules against negotiating directly with those employees instead of with their union. So Sega, of course, hasn't replied to any requests for comment. As stated by Elise Williker, who's a senior QA tester, I'm going to read the quote. It's disheartening to see such actions from Sega, as it is unmistakably demonstrates bad faith bargaining and refusal to recognize the valuable contributions of a significant portion of our colleagues. We have filed an unfair labor practice charge to call out Sega's direct dealing with members and its breaching of the status quo by telling bargaining unit members that our jobs would be ending shortly. So, of course, it's gone to the National Labor Relations Board for review. But it may not be resolved in time to prevent the layoffs. But I hope that they nail them for this. It really makes me very disappointed in Sega. It really makes me not want to buy any of their products until they, you know, recognize the authority of the union.
Yeah, and the wave of the unionizing is coming. I'm not surprised to see a game company allegedly pushing back, you know, in the same type of way, but they're not going to win. They're not going to win the war. They might see this as a winning the battle, especially if, you know, they can't reverse this by the time people actually get laid off, but they're not going to win the war. And so I think companies need to figure out how to welcome this culture, because it's not going away. And yeah, like Dark Soccer is expressing with her feelings, it's just going to put more people off. And that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Sega.
Yeah. So there was all those rumors that, you know, remember Microsoft and I think even other companies were looking to purchase Sega, but didn't end up going through with that, obviously. So that's finally, we finally got a comment from Sega regarding it, from the COO, saying that they are honored that so many companies were interested in purchasing Sega, but Sega is not for sale. Many companies are interested. We feel honored. We have attractive IPs and potentials. Companies owned by the owner, a strong owner. I don't think that kind of transaction is going to happen, according to Yatsumi. And of course, you know, they talked about growing, that they're, you know, pursuing different categories, like of course Roblox, because they have the Sonic Speed Simulator there, and their movies, which have been wildly successful thanks to, you know, some redesigns of the main character. And Actually, they have their TV series coming too, because Knuckles has his TV series pretty soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where they go, but they're not going to be owned by Microsoft anytime soon.
Or anyone, for that matter. They're going to...
Yeah, or anyone.
And probably after that last story, nobody wants to touch them right now anyway, so...
Well, yeah, makes them less attractive, for sure.
That's true. Also, lastly here, before we get to some of our regular segments, you know, and talking about things that are not so attractive, we're going to talk about AI-generated content and how it is starting to spread more and more on YouTube. YouTube has now made a requirement per a blog post made by Product Management Vice President Jennifer Flannery O'Connor and Emily Moxley. They are both vice presidents. They talked about this in a blog post on November 14th, stating that any video that contains AI-generated content requires disclosure and content labels in the video description that make it clear that aspects of the video were generated by AI. So basically, events that never happened, deep fake showing an individual that's doing something they didn't actually do. So that's good. But the question is, how are they going to enforce this? Because sometimes this is very difficult stuff to detect. So that's the question we don't know the answer to yet. I mean, I think these labels are probably pretty important and a very important thing to move to, but how are they going to enforce this? And how are they not going to over-enforce this, as YouTube tends to do? And what I mean by that is err on the side of, you know, like where anybody could say, oh, this is made by AI, and now the thing gets shut down because somebody reported it, even if it was legit and not the result of AI. So we don't know. But YouTube is rolling out community guidelines that allow, if you are affected by AI-generated content, you can request that a video is removed. So like if somebody were to make a video of me saying something hideous that I never said, I could make that request to YouTube to take it down. YouTube is also doing this for like musicians whose voices is being mimicked by AI software, which I think is very interesting because that's a very big trend on YouTube right now, is these softwares of creators. Yeah, and that whole thing. What?
I was going to say, are you going to, what about the other part of that? Have you heard about that one?
What?
So they are allowing them to crack down on it. However, there's also a part of Google's AI thing. Certain artists have signed up to allow their voice to be used for different things. So you could... you can prompt it to generate like something for you and use that in your YouTube shorts.
Oh, interesting. Well, then they also say that parody is still fair game. And that's an interesting gray area too, is what is parody? So we're
there. You ruined it. That like that channel. I love their stuff where they take, they do AI voices and ruin songs. Like they'll have like Johnny Cash sing like, you know, my humps or something like that, you know, ridiculous. They'll mimic the voice doing that.
But when Johnny Cash sang a Nine Inch Nails song, it was unironically one of the best covers ever made, period, in history. So it's interesting. It's just interesting to me.
And that, honestly, I think that something like that would be a violation of his estate. I still think it would if they're taking his actual vocal samples, running it through AI, you know, to have it generate words that he would have never touched in his voice, to me is a violation of... I don't think it would be parody. I think a parody would be if there was a true singer who sounded like him, doing it. That's a parody. Taking his vocal samples is theft.
Yeah. Well, and obviously relating this back to video games, because you might wonder what does this have to do with video games? So we've been focusing a lot on this story of musicians because that's where the blog post was going. But a lot of people that are really getting angry at this are voice actors and the voice actors from video games, because, and this is, you know, to some of the voice actors I follow on Twitter, this is a real bad issue right now, is that there's these people making these YouTubes of people doing character voices by AI. And again, it's things that these characters would never say. So it's, it's something's got to give. And I absolutely think these voice actors have every right to sue, on these grounds when this is being stolen, essentially. But how do you make that happen without flooding the courts with issues and so forth? I don't know. There really doesn't seem to be an easy issue about this for sure. So anyway, we need to travel.
I want to go
ahead.
No, I really want to point out that what Mike Deft said about not confusing text to speech with AI, because with text to speech, well, first of all, I'm sure anyone who's been on my channel in the last couple of weeks has heard Samantha. That is a paid actor providing voice samples for the specific use of making things read, like being able to convert that to text, and it never sounds great. Siri sounds great, but like a lot of those just don't sound very good because they're having to do them on the fly. That is not AI. That is simply voice synthesizing with paid for recorded voice samples.
Yeah. All right. Well, in our next segment, we need to take a trip down memory lane to a time when AI just meant the computer you were playing against, in a segment we call the Classic Game of the Week. Here's the bumper.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the Classic Game of the Week.
And what did you pick for us this week, Arsakra?
I picked Toe Ball number 1. It is a fighting game that came out for the PlayStation. It was developed by Dream Factory and published by Square in 1996. It was Dream Factory's very first release and Square's first release on a CD-based console. So there you go. One of the big selling points about this game. Well, first of all, the characters were designed by Toriyama, who did the Dragon Ball series and Chrono Trigger. And it did have a sequel named Toe Ball 2 that didn't come out outside of Asian. At the Asian market. So the North American and Japanese version of the game was packaged with a playable demo of Final Fantasy VII and had previews of Final Fantasy Tactics, Bushido Blade, and Saga Frontier. So, I mean, this is kind of a big deal. And honestly, I think most of the people I knew got the game for the Final Fantasy VII demo.
Guilty.
I'm gonna be honest. Yeah. So, but then when you go back in and play, the game is actually a fairly decent game. Toe Ball number 1, it was a tournament mode where two player versus a practice mode and a quest mode that used their fighting game engine. It ran at 60 frames a second because the polygons of the game were not textured. And with reducing the details, it gave it a very distinctive look compared to other fighting games at the time. The controls were full freedom of movement in the ring as long as you face the opponent. And I want to know who's texting me. Okay. Sorry, anyway. You also have a grappling and blocking system. You had counter moves with it. You had a dash and jump. And you had like high, medium, low attacks. There's the quest mode as well, which lets you explore a dungeon. You have to go down a number of floors. You have traps. You have fights waiting for you. With some of the enemies being the playable characters, you find items, you know, as you go, kind of like a rudimentary adventure RPG mode. But you can't save the progress. If you die, you start over. But if you defeat certain characters in this mode, you unlock them as playable characters. So the story of the game is that it takes place in 2048 on a planet called Toe Ball, which has these deposits of an energy ores called Momoron. And so the tournament is to see who has the rights to, you know, mine the ore. So that's it. I mean, a little bit unique as far as reasons for fighting games, but meh. So Toe Ball number 1, the music was composed by 8 of Square's composers. including Mitsuda Yasunori, Kawakami Yasuhiro, Sasai Ryuji, Hamazu Masashi, Nakano Junya, Ito Kenji, Matsueda Noriko, and Shimomura Yoko. We know her. We love her. It had different music themes in electronica, rock, some instrumentals, even some kind of hip hop and ambience, and even some jazz themes in there. So the album was released as Tobal Number One Remixes Electrical Indian, is what it was called. But anyway, I mean, the whole big thing, this was the eighth selling video best selling video game of 1998 in Japan, and pretty much that has been attributed to the inclusion of the Final Fantasy VII demo disc. And it actually, even though it didn't sell as well in the US, it did kind of become a cult hit over here. It sold 99,183 copies in the US. In Japan, it sold 752,000 copies in 96. The game got very positive reviews. It, you know, it was innovative, had a different graphic approach. The controls left a little bit to be desired. It was compared to Tekken 2 and Virtua Fighter for the controls, with those, you know, those other, the previous games being considered much more sophisticated in their control. But they also said that having a game that ran at 60 frames per second in a 640 by 480 resolution for its time was a pretty good thing. They found, some people found the blocking system to be confused, but the quest system was very, very new for its time. So there were other releases later on. The sequel to Tobal Number 2 was released in 1997 for PlayStation in Japan only. I've played it. It was pretty okay. And then there was the mobile phone version called Tobal M, released in Japan on December 12th, 2007. And of course, what phones did we have in 2007 that would have been capable of running something like that in the US?
That old Sprint flip phone I had.
I mean,
would not have run this.
The
it was, yeah.
Original iPhone release was
2006, yeah. If I remember right, yeah.
Well, no. That was 2007. The iPhone at the time could have run it, but we didn't have the App Store until a little bit after the first release, so it would have had to have been completely reprogrammed. So, anyway. So that's it. The game, Tobal Number One.
There it is, your classic game of the week. Tobal Number One, better known as the game that had the demo for Final Fantasy VII.
See, and I always thought that was Tobal Number Two that had the demo for Final Fantasy VII, but there was another game that had a sequel too that I might be confusing with. I don't know, but I definitely got that for the demo.
There was a one that had actually Final Fantasy VII came with the demo for Brave Fencer Musashi.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did have that.
Tobal Number Two did not come out with any kind of demo disc, according to this. Although it got better ratings by Famitsu.
I think I did get it anyways. I am pretty sure I had Tobal Number Two. So I remember that.
Yeah, we've got Tobal Number Two. I mean, we imported it at the time. I believe that Zen Monkey, the kangaroo was in Tekken, the Tekken series. I don't remember if there was a kangaroo in the Tobal games. I know that you could fight a chocobo in Tobal Number Two.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Work. All right. Well, let's check out a few other headlines here real quick in a segment we call Rapid Fire News. We'll start with Loki.
Yep. So apparently it's the 25th anniversary of Half-Life, and they've released an update to go along with that. So Half-Life has gotten the 25th anniversary update, which adds Some new multiplayer maps, as well as some technical improvements as well. So you have three new multiplayer maps: Double Cross, Rust Mill, Zen DM, and two multiplayer models: Skeleton and Too Much Coffee Man. I love Too Much Coffee Man. That's awesome. It's also, it was free, and I think it still is free for a specific period of time. I don't remember when that's, but I think it's free for now, because my kids were telling me about that too. They were like, oh, hey, did you know Half-Life is free? I'm like, I'm pretty sure I already own that. And then, of course, along with that, they've also released a 25th anniversary Half-Life documentary from Valve, and you can probably check that out, I'm guessing, for free as well. So it's part of the 25th anniversary update as well. To go back to that, includes the original includes Half-Life Uplink, which was originally released as a CD exclusive for magazines and hardware manufacturers. So that's a piece of something you can do. It's a mini campaign, and they also did the four new multiplayer maps, including Contamination, Pool Party, Disposal, and Rocket Frenzy. Cool. I will have to check that out.
All right.
You know, 25 years of Half-Life would be the perfect time to announce Half-Life 3. Just saying, Valve, you know, like...
That was literally the only reason why I checked the announcement.
I mean, they could be just waiting for, you know, a certain Game Awards type show to announce something that epic.
Don't set the bar at that. You'll just leave disappointed. Don't do that to yourself. All right, Darsako, what do you have?
Well, I also have a correction to make. Mm. So Final Fantasy VII didn't have a demo disc with it. It was with Musashi, the demo for Final Fantasy VIII came with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I knew there was a correlation, though.
So I definitely got Sobel 1 for the Final Fantasy VII demo, because I remember playing that.
Well, at any rate, the PlayStation Plus game catalog and classics catalog for November 2023 has been announced. We have alternate Jake Hunter Daedalus, The Awakening of Golden Jazz. Dead Island Riptide Definitive Edition, Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen, Ayuden Chronicles Rising, Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme versus Maxi Boost On, Nobunaga's Ambition Taishi, River City Melee Mach, Superliminal, Teardown, and then Grandia is apparently... I think that it's a Grandia. No, it's the original Grandia. Never mind, because I know that they're doing a Grandia remaster. And I take very big exception with this site, saying that it was the classic PlayStation RPG when this shit came out on the Sega Saturn first. Get it right. Jet Moto also coming out from PlayStation stuff for PS2, Parappa the Rapper 2, PSP, Up. And for PS4, Klonoa Fantasy Reverie series. I love freaking Klonoa. Game made me cry. Ugly cry. All right, that's it.
All right, and what do I have for us? Oh, you brought up Dragon's Dogma 2. Well, there's going to be a whole showcase coming up on that on November 28th that will show 15 whole minutes of new information and gameplay reveals. That'll be at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern on YouTube. Directly from director Hideki Itsuno and producer of the game, of course, Dragon's Dogma 2, being developed for PlayStation 5, the Xbox Series, and PC via Steam as well. We don't know the release date yet, but soon. So, speaking of release dates, let's travel around and check out some games that are coming out a little sooner. We'll go to Loki in the U.S. first.
Yep, this is probably going to be one of the last few weeks that we have a few things coming out. So In the Stars and Time on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5. Let's see, we've got Pew Pew Molcar, Let's Molcar Party on Nintendo Switch. We have Volferus, Mecha Therian on PC. Wordless on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Dyschronia Chronos Alternate on Nintendo Switch. Ninja Aizen on PC. And that's it.
All right, let's travel over to Japan and check out the releases over there, although I'm going to guess it's probably a pretty slow week, even if the holidays don't flow the same way. Looking at the Nintendo Switch, on the 22nd of November, we have R.E.D. Cherish. It's R.E. colon D, and it's like an anime or a manga. It's not like Resident Evil or something like that. That would be cool. Dyschronia Chronos Alternate Definitive Edition is also out on the 22nd. As is Could Wafter Converted Edition is out on the Switch as well. And Getsui no Kusari Sakuran Paranoia is out in a regular and special edition in Japan. All of that on the 23rd, actually, is that game's release. Checking out the PlayStation 5, we have Stray gets its Japanese release in Japan on November 22nd. Meet Your Maker, another game we got here a few months ago, is also out in Japan. Finally, on the 22nd. With that, we can travel over to Europe. Dark Sakura.
So, just a handful. On the 21st, we have Puy Puy Molcar Let's Molcar Party. That's for Switch. On the 23rd, for PlayStation and Switch, we have Spirit of the Island Paradise Edition. On the 24th, the rest of these are the 24th, we have for PlayStation and Switch, TMNT Shredder's Revenge Anniversary Edition. For Xbox, Disney Dreamlight Valley Cozy Edition. On the three consoles, Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl 2. For PlayStation, Tintin Reporter Cigars and the Pharaoh Limited Edition. That's it.
All right. Well, usually we would do some more stories at this point, but we've kind of hit the end of all the stories we had slotted tonight. Again, it's a little bit of a shorter news week this week, so this is the part where we're going to get into the listener roundtable. But I will say real quick, I'm actually very glad that, Dark Soccer, you were reading that story and you mentioned Ayuden Chronicle, because it reminded me, Oops, I backed that on Kickstarter, I don't know how many years ago, and I have until this week to pick what platform I get my digital key on, and I forgot to do it. So I'm doing it right now to make sure I get the platform that I want, which I think I'm going to go with PlayStation 5. I could see why maybe Nintendo Switch, but I'm going to go with PlayStation 5. I thought I'd already picked Xbox some time ago, but I didn't have a PS5 then. So I'm going to go with PS5. I thought you'd all like to know.
Hi.
All right, let's get to the listener roundtable.
I'm glad that I inadvertently reminded you of a thing.
You did, because I'd like to get my thing that I paid for and like literally forgot about because it's been so fucking long. But I am excited to play the game, to be honest. So there is that. Okay, let's move on and travel listener roundtable. We're going to invite your emails. Participate at orangeloungetrader.com is the place to send us an email. I think I saw one come in just before the show.
We've got one.
We've got one. Woohoo!
We've got one.
Oh my God, there's an email. Hold up. We got an email.
We do.
I'm going to faint.
I feel like, like Janine and Ghostbusters. We've got one! Anyway. So I will start off. Dear OLR fam, it's your girl Mishi here. First and foremost, please excuse the grammatical errors as I am writing this on my cell phone. I'll forgive you this once. Now down to what I wanted to say. Y'all listen, I've never been so disappointed in a game company as I have with the makers of Coral Island. I want to like the game. In fact, I want to love it, but it feels like they're not even trying to fix their mess up. In my honest opinion, they never should have bothered releasing the game on console, especially if they were only planning on releasing half of it for console players. Yes, they're aware of the mess up, but this one's a pretty big one. When are they going to fix it? Might I add, the errors are, as far as I know, on console. Thank goodness I didn't pay for it, because I'd be even more upset. Excuse me. And from what I heard, and please correct me if I'm wrong, they released it so fast because apparently Humble Bundle is going under? I haven't heard anything about that. If that's the case, they never should have released it at all specifically for console, and I'm praying Core Keeper and Roots of Pacha, which are both due out soon on Switch, don't make the same mistake. As a gamer, Am I even a little bit wrong for feeling saltier than the Dead Sea? Sincerely, disgruntled gamer. How you feel is how you feel. Yeah. I mean, I don't know the whole situation behind it, and I've never heard of the game before. And I also never heard of anything about Humble Bundle going over.
I don't think they're going under it.
So I looked into it a little bit. Humble isn't going under, but in a report from 4 days ago, which did not make our show world tonight, Humble Games was the latest to lay off employees.
Hooray!
Yeah, not really. So Humble Bundle, of course, started in 2010. And let's see, on LinkedIn, some folks were reporting that they lost positions, saying it's a sad day at Humble Games for a lot of folks. Let's see, I realize some digital news outlets have read into my a lot of folks quite literally and linking to my profile trying to do some napkin math. But when you see, when you have 1 ounce of empathy, you realize the impact of layoffs on the people who are laid off, of course, but also on the people who are not laid off. And that is indeed a lot of people. So it hasn't been revealed how many were laid off, but that may be why the rumors are swirling the way they are. So it's not the total truth, but there's a hint of it. There's a whisper of truth in it. So, but I'm actually surprised to hear this from Mish, because I know she was all about this game, because I remember she was talking about it in my chat one day. So I'm kind of surprised to hear what happened there. Interesting.
Well, like I said, I haven't heard of the game, but if it's a game that you want to love and it's come out in such a tainted edition, then you're well within your rights to feel the way that you do. You're the consumer of this.
Exactly. It's Stardew Valley-ish is the game, basically. It's kind of on the backs of that game's popularity, but not. It has more of like a isometric, we'll say Zelda Link to the Past kind of look to it. It's not even really sprite based, it kind of has that more kind of, 2D-esque tilted 2D, we'll say, view of that. So, at least from what I've seen of it, it looks cute. I would play it at some point if I didn't have a backlog a mile long, to catch up on. So speaking of, thank you for the email, and we invite more emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. Speaking of catching up, I often turn to the phones at our Discord over at vognetwork.com/discord, and they are empty, but not tonight. We have a call waiting to come on the show. I'm excited. Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I was hoping to hear from this person last week, but you know what Blanche Devereaux says, better late than pregnant. So let's welcome onto the show, hello, YYR.
Ah, I thought you were going to let me say who I was.
No, I decided to ruin it. Plus, as I was laying it up there, I was saying I was actually hoping secretly to hear from you last week, but then the Pokemon Go was telling me why I might not have heard from you last week. Without giving, what the hell was that? Who hit the shade button? But I didn't know how much of that you wanted me to say on air. So I was just like, okay, I guess I'm not surprised to hear not from YYR. But I'm sure you had to have listened to last week. Please tell me you listened to last week's show.
You know what? I didn't actually get through the whole thing, but I did listen to the opening segment, and that is why I'm calling in tonight.
As long as you heard the beginning. Yes, that's fine. That's fine. As long as you heard the beginning. That's the part I needed you to hear. So I'm sure, in the great words of Jerry Blank, I've got something to say.
Of course. I've got something to say about everything.
YYR, the floor is yours.
I just wanted to clarify, because the thing is, regarding what happened to the North American players with Konami Arcade Championship DDR this year, yes, it sucks. Yes, it was bullshit. But there is an actual logical reason as to why the American finalists were disqualified that was avoidable, but it's bullshit. But to understand it, I do need to go into a little bit of boring background on Konami's esoteric rules.
Okay.
And, what led to this.
Right, let me get my pillow. I'm just kidding.
Well, you may want to get a pen and paper if we still use those things.
It's all about OneNote.
All right. Well, get your fingers ready then. And basically what it boils down to is So if you go back to 2016, when DDR Ace released, and you know everybody, and I just saw the head almost fall off on Jamie's avatar, so that was fun. So yeah, if you go back to 2016, and now we suddenly had access to a current version of DDR with EMUs and everything. So of course we all wanted to sign up, and you know, you buy the card, you log in for the first time. You don't actually ever need to go to Konami's website. You can use the score saving and whatnot in the game and unlock things without ever having to do that. But if you want to fully take advantage of the game's features, like adding rivals and setting some additional options and entering things like KAC, you do have to create a Konami ID. And when you do that, you have to say, okay, it's this country that I'm creating the Konami ID for. And that country is locked and can't be changed. So when the game came out, we all created North American accounts because, well, we're in North America. But after a while, we started to understand that there were certain features that you could only access if you were using a Japanese account, specifically because they were locked behind subscriptions, the basic core specifically, things like the ability to set certain options in the game, like make your background darker, put the arrows in front of the combo display, you know, stupid stuff. But in order to set these things, you needed a Japanese region account. Now, this wasn't a big deal back then, because what you could do, and what we all did, was create a second Konami ID for Japan region. And then what we could then do is detach our eAmusement Pass, the card we use to log in, which exists as a separate entity from your Konami ID. We could detach it from our North American account and just reattach it to the Japanese account. We lose nothing, and we gained a whole lot of extra features. In fact, you know, that is what you need a Japan region account now in order to access all the new home versions of Bimani games. So, and then when Konami Arcade Championship happened for the first time in DDR Ace, and everyone was super excited about that, we read the rules and it said you have to enter with a Konami ID that matches your region of residence, or you will not be able to enter the finals. So what did we all do? We switched back from our Japan region to North American region. We detached our card from Japan, reattached it to North America. Boom. We were all able to enter KAC. Three North Americans went to finals that year. And I believe Chris Chaik won. And that was a great time. It was exciting to watch. It raised awareness of the game. It got a lot of people excited. Yeah, awesome. Fast forward to now. Oh, and there's one other fact I'm going to throw in. Every year, for I don't even know how long, Konami has added new songs to the game that debut with the KAC qualifiers. You know, because obviously they got to make things a little more challenging, give you something that nobody has ever seen before.
Sure.
So
that part's cool.
Yeah. And but the thing is, in order to unlock those songs, you have to register for KAC. You log in with your card on the website. You basically click a button, and then you're officially entered into KAC, and those songs unlock the next time you play the game. So that's cool. So anyway, fast forward to this year.
So I just want to point out, like, so far, this is a pretty convoluted system by Konami's own making that everybody just kind of played around with because they just played along with it because, okay, this is how we get the features. Yeah. We're used to this shit from Konami. Yeah. Just give us the new songs because that's essentially what it is. Give us the same features and same songs as you've given everyone else. Just do that. And we'll mm-hmm. play this little game so we can just have the same features as everyone else.
Basically.
That's kind of what I'm hearing from chapter one. Okay.
So anyway, fast forward to this year. This is the first time that North America has been eligible for KAC since pre-COVID, because what happened, you know, when the year COVID started, they were going to do KAC, but they basically they delayed the finals for more than a year and limited it to Japan only. And then it was like cut down the final the following year. And so this is the first year that they were actually running a legit KAC and inviting North America to enter again. However, one thing changed, one significant thing changed back in January of this year. For some reason, I don't know what reason, Konami decided to stop allowing eAmusement passes to be detached from one region's account and added to another region's account. That is no longer possible. So everyone who's playing, you know, in North America who has a Japanese Konami ID, guess what? Our cards are stuck in Japan. And we can no longer remove them.
Why did Konami do this?
That is a good question that I do not have the answer for.
And that is completely the answer I expected, and I set you up for that, because why? What was the reason? There was no reason. Anyway, sorry.
Exactly.
Please continue. Yes.
So what that created was a situation where anyone who wanted to enter KAC needed to buy a second card, you know, create, you know, their account, register for KAC, and then use their sub account, for lack of a better term, to actually play the songs and qualify and, you know, get the best score possible. However, I'm sure, as someone who got to catch them all, you know, a fellow gamer who got to catch them all, you understand the importance of having everything unlocked on your main account. Yes?
Uh-huh. 100%.
Well, the only way to unlock those two songs, as usual, is to register for KAC on your main account, which they did. And that's the problem, because another one of the KAC rules that has always been there is if you enter using multiple accounts, you will be disqualified. So there was a way that North Americans could compete and not be disqualified, and that was they could not register and unlock those two songs on their main accounts. They would have to intentionally not unlock those songs and wait for them to be unlocked for everybody, which could be 1 or 2 years or more, which sucks.
Yeah.
But
and honestly, Aaron, it doesn't, and I don't think you called in intending to do this, but it doesn't sway my opinion on how shitty Konami's being in this whole thing, because it's their own convoluted system that they decided to flip the rules on inexplicably and apparently for no reason. It's not like they don't fucking know, maybe I'm giving them too much credit. If they wanted to know, they could certainly find out how many people are switching their regions and why they might be doing that and read into what the players want. If they wanted to do that,
maybe people are switching the regions because there's so many games, their games that are being licensed to US arcades that they want the unlocks on. Like, I don't know. That's stupid.
It is stupid.
Why? You know, and if the reason was music licensing, we can't have a song here, da 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 da. Okay. But then why was it open to switching in the first place? You know, because somebody moves. Okay, how often does that actually happen? And, you know, maybe if that big life event like that happens, then you just either A, suck it up and start over, or B, maybe a longer process of contacting Konami with a piece of mail. I don't fucking know. But it should not be what it was now. You know, like, it, and just to take it away for literally no reason.
Yeah, and another thing, because, you know, you can't switch to Japan region anymore, the players using these sub-accounts are also at a disadvantage because, whatchamacallit, because you can't make the background darker, and you can't, you know, those options are still locked to Japan region because they're locked behind a subscription. So
for no reason. Why is there a subscription to make the game
accessible,
easier to... It's just...
Well, that's for Japan too. The Japanese people have to subscribe to that in order to set that stuff.
It doesn't matter. I don't care who has to subscribe. Yeah. It is stupid.
Anyway. I'm not going to argue that it's bullshit. Yeah.
So what's your take on? So I'm kind of okay. So thank you for laying it out. Even though I'm kind of sitting here going, okay, Konami continues to be convoluted and frustrating. Yes,
and basically the emails that, like if. Basically, the way the emails read to me is Konami sent to Chris Chaik, who, by the way, it was just absolutely gut-wrenching to hear you read his Twitter comments because it sucks. But the way I read his email, those emails was, you know, Konami sends to Chris, so it looks like you're using multiple accounts. Can you explain yourself? And Chris sent what he did. And Konami read that and said, okay, you have confirmed that you use multiple accounts, therefore you're disqualified. You know,
what about the Korean players, pointed out in chat by SSJ100 Matt?
The Korea is basically the same situation as us. If you're asking about FFM specifically, I don't think he qualified, but he was personally invited to compete in the finals, and he turned them down.
Well, I'm glad he did, but I don't understand why Konami can't just personally invite Chris either or any of the other.
I need a fundamental understanding of another question. Didn't Chris win something big the last time there was one of these?
Yes, he's won world champion twice.
So, I mean, and I'm not for people getting special treatment and all that stuff. However, circumstances be what they may. Knowing that Konami has these convoluted rules, as Chris points out in his email, why he had to do what he had to do, knowing that Chris is a multiple world championship winning thing, why was he not given a special invitation to do this? That's the part that like doesn't click for me. And like, I don't know the guy very well. If his attitude sucks or something, I would not be aware of it, but I'm not getting that sense at all from people that seem to know him, and the post he made on Twitter seemed very like I felt that thing he wrote on Twitter. I was like, ow, I felt that. Like, it seemed very like relatable. And so I was just kind of in shock that like, so why did Konami reach out to some people but not to others? That also doesn't make sense.
You know, I will say he's not 100% free of controversy, but I have met him. He's a really cool, chill dude. He's a nice guy, and I feel for him.
Yeah. Well, none of us are free of controversy, to be fair. None of us are free of controversy. So, especially not me. I don't expect you to be Konami's defense here, YYR. I appreciate you giving a better understanding of this whole thing, but it's just, you know, it's still just...
Yeah, I wasn't so much defending them as...
Yeah.
More explaining what happened.
Yeah.
That we hope you continue to support Konami. Yeah, SSJ100 Matt in chat says, I hate that they just gave him the canned. We hope you continue to support Konami. And honestly, that's just their standard response.
Yeah, I get that.
It's a very Japanese company standard response.
Probably nobody important that was actually writing that email, but there's that part of me that goes, could no one at Konami like critically think about how they're treating a former world champion, a title not held by many people, who advocates for their game? Like,
I don't think they care.
Well, and then my response is, well, I don't care. So it's just, you know, and like, why do we continue to support DDR? Though granted, I don't support it the way I used to. And that part of that's age, stamina, etc. You fill in the blank here. But I just like when I hear about this type of shit, I'm not exactly excited to jump back in and say, oh, yeah, I got to get back in the DDR community because it sounds like a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, it's a very strange time right now between, you know, the Dave and Buster's business, the Round One business. There's a controversial thing they added to the game recently, too. Something called, I don't know how familiar you are with the current version of the game where, you know, they give you a choice between the normal mode and the premium mode. And in Japan, the premium mode costs more. And in some countries, the premium mode costs double, but, you know, it gives you access to extra stage. It's insurance. If you fail in the first or second song, you get to keep going, you know, that kind of thing. They've added now something called Galaxy Play, which basically they've increased over time the amount of plays that you need to unlock a song. They've made that more difficult. They've locked a significant amount of content in the new version. A lot of it has to be unlocked before it can be played. Well, Galaxy Play, if you select that, any song that is not unlocked, you play it once. You don't even need to pass. It's unlocked. Done. And then they added like a new event with this update. And normally you have to play 9 songs before you can access the event. Now it's 3 if you pick this thing. It sounds great. It literally costs 3 credits to play 1 game of Galaxy Play. You have to swipe your card 3 times to play once.
I got a question for you, YYR. Have you ever played a game called Step Maniacs?
I have. It's been a long time since I got to play it. They actually now have in my mall 2 of them. One of them is apparently the brand new Super Deluxe model, and it costs a fortune to play also. I love what they've done with it.
Yeah, it's a pretty good game, huh?
It's a great game.
It's a great game. Yeah, I agree. It's a great game. That's all. That's all I have to say.
I'm surprised that they haven't tried to do some sort of, like, you know, competitive series or something like that as a response. Mm-hmm. That would have been interesting.
Wait,
these players aren't invited? Well, we'll just do our own thing and we'll invite those players. So
I could see where a particular individual may have PTSD in dealing with legally shaky scenarios involving a certain Japanese company that they would rather not.
Having a competition is not going to cause any. I don't think having a competition is going to necessarily.
No, but it should probably be unofficial.
The only thing that stinks is I don't think Step Maniacs has the distribution where,
and that is true,
you know,
too. I
understand a lot of folks would be able to compete.
Those machines,
I think,
are
they may be even harder to find than DDR, which is pretty hard to get to already.
unless you know the right private collector, some fans be wild in a good way. So anyway, all right. YYR, I appreciate you giving the additional perspective on that story and so forth. Yeah, SJ100 Matt says, we've been educated tonight on DDR. Happy 19 November, everybody. appropriate time.
I didn't even notice.
you, of all people, didn't even notice? I love it. All right.
Guilty.
All right. YYR, any closing thoughts for us tonight before we let you go?
Please continue to look forward to super duper multitasking. It's actually nearing completion. Ooh. I can say that now.
I'm excited.
I've been working very hard on it for like the last 6 months.
But you have a life as well, and it's just you. Yeah. So yeah, I get it.
But there's I'm working on the new missions now. Some of them are disgustingly hard.
And I was going to say, and a baby, but the more I think about it, I'm like, your baby's probably like 3 or 4 at this point.
She's 5 and a half now.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Where have I been? What is time?
She's in kindergarten and she came home last week and she's like, my friend said that she didn't want to be my friend anymore. Aww. And she's ignoring me on the playground. I'm like, already? You're only 5 and you have to go through this already?
What a... Who's that other kid? What a bitch.
I think by the end of the week, it was all buddy again.
I mean, isn't there the general, you know, memory of a cat, you know, 17 minutes and then everything's fine?
Yeah. I don't know about that. They remember a whole lot that I forget.
True.
He's already like reminded me of stuff, and I'm like, on one hand, thank you, and on the other hand, I felt real dumb.
Oh, it's all right. All right. Well, YYR, I'm gonna let you go and look forward to all the continued YYR games releases that you have in the pipeline, and realize that good things take time. And if you don't believe me, look at Baldur's Gate 3. Same approach. All right.
Fair point. All right. Well, thanks again for the show. Have a great week.
Thank you. Take care, YYR. Thanks for calling.
Take care.
See you later.
Bye. What a lovely little present for 19 November here, and we appreciate YYR giving us a call. With that, I do want to turn it over to any final thoughts. Before I get to final thoughts, I'm sorry, last minute stories or anything else people want to discuss before we wrap it up?
No. Yeah, I don't think I had anything.
All right. I actually had one thing. So Loki, I've been kind of multitasking a lot and I haven't really been able to focus, but is there a reason why the video playing behind you tonight is just three logos cycling over and over again? It doesn't actually show any gameplay for the last 2 hours.
I don't know why it's doing that. If it keeps resetting, it's just the Konami.
It's one of those things. Like I'm just not looking at the right moments, but now that, you know, I've been listening to YYR, just kind of like staring and I'm watching the video
it's
play behind
probably,
you.
Is it
an attract mode that broke?
maybe. It's Simpsons bowling.
Yes, I see that. By Konami and Fox Entertainment.
I don't understand why it's not... I don't know. Maybe that's just the video. Maybe it's just the...
Yes.
Apparently, I did not appear to pay attention when I just did arcade long play, Simpsons Bowling Part 1. It's 24 seconds long, and that is all it is. So it is just those logos they're playing.
That's not a long play. That's a short
play. That's not even a long play.
That's a micro play. I'm sorry.
The whole point was supposed to be because I couldn't think of something that, you know, correlated with Thanksgiving. And if you roll three strikes, what's it called?
A turkey. Oh, that's a big brain reference. Good for you. That's good.
But instead, it's the Simpsons bowling logo Konami thing. I didn't even realize it was. I literally didn't look at it. So
all you're missing is the FBI warning: winners don't use drugs. That's all you're missing in that rotation there. All right. Speaking of like funny logos and arcades attract. So my Tron machine, because I have arcade 1UP machines that sit behind me when we broadcast on Twitch. My Tron machine got a firmware update last week, and I was like, ooh, that's cool, a firmware update. Sometimes they add new games with these. Obviously, it was nothing like that. I was like, okay, maybe it's just a minor fix that I don't know. I don't know what it did or whatever. I go to turn on the machine today, and do you know what greets me? Brand new thing I'd never seen before. An advertisement. Arcade,
oh boy.
Arcade 1UP Black Friday sale going on now with a QR code. That's what that firmware added in the machine. The ability to throw an advertisement. Yeah.
On your product.
Boo.
That you paid for.
Boo.
Like that's some.
Boo. That not cool. It's not like I don't fucking have the app or you're not sending me fucking emails. It did not need to go to the machine's attract mode. Now, granted, because I was taking a picture and uploading it to social media going, what the fuck, blah, 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 except I don't use shitter anymore, so I can't actually tag Arcade 1UP. But I can still scream into the ether, and that's what people do on the internet very well. And so I was posting all that, and while I was writing that, the screen did go away, and it defaulted into attract mode. So that splash does go away after a certain amount of time, but I noticed it, and I wasn't happy. Which actually sucks because there are some sales where I'm like, oh, I'm tempted. But I spent money on shop cards instead. So I have Mario RPG coming. So there's that. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. That's good enough for random other topics. We can move to wrap things up. So thank you all, as always, for listening to Orange Launch Radio. We hope you enjoyed what you heard here tonight. If you liked what you heard, tell a friend or five about the show. Help us spread the word. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices to put out on air. A nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is you heard this podcast go an awful long way. With all that, I would like to wrap it up. So, also I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving for those that celebrate, here in the States this week. If nothing else, I hope you have good, family time if that's a thing you're into, or just catching up on your fucking video game backlog. Cause maybe you don't have to work for a couple days. For everybody that does have to work on Black Friday because they work retail or something else, my thoughts and prayers. I know those don't do much, but, just hang in there, and I hope your days are drama-free as possible on a day like that. All right. That being said, Dar Sakura, let's go to you and your final thought, because I'm sure you're going to do some deading by delighting.
I am pretty discouraged by the fact that I can't find a true red bun for my hair, because I have to have a fake bun for ballet recital. And this is just aggravating. This means that I've had to buy extensions in the right hair color and make my own damn bun. Yes, I will have my ballerina bun. Damn it.
Please send a picture.
Also, I totally learned how to do a pas de chat, and I'm very, very happy, because a pas de chat is the step of the cat. And it is such a cute step, and I'm glad I can do one now.
When I think of the ballet, I think about how every single year we had to go see the Nutcracker downtown because a girl in our school was in it without fail every single year. So, Dar Sacro, will I ever get to see you in a production of the Nutcracker?
Well, we are doing the flutes from Nutcracker. Okay. And my, you can get a ticket on the set for the 17th.
Maybe. I'll see what I'm doing that day. So,
I'll send you a link to it. Just don't let me forget.
Okay.
Also, Hanukkah happens before Christmas, so I better get donuts, damn it.
All right.
Just saying.
All right. Enjoy your
stream. Bye.
Bye. Have a good one.
Will do.
All right. With that, we go to Loki and your final thought tonight.
If it was a Simpsons themed killer in DVD, would it be Dead by Donut or Death by Donuts? Dead by Donuts?
Forbidden Donut.
Forbidden Donuts.
Yes. As long as Homer is the survivor, yes. And my final thought is there was actually a I wanted to say a portal, but it was actually a Pikmin mushroom that we went on. That was something like, it wasn't Forbidden Donut, but it was like loud pink. What was the name of the donut? It was something like Pink Donuts, Frosted Pink Donuts. And it was these giant, I thought it was the cutest little picture and postcard I've seen in Pikmin Bloom yet. And I think I sent it to Mrs. Black Wolf, I think. And I'm going to have to go back by there to get more postcards, because I love the Pink Donut postcard. And Pikmin is always great for exercise and all that good stuff, just not when it's raining. I did a very poor job in the weekly challenge this week and had to get carried by the other people in the challenge because it was raining, and it's a lot of work to go walk in the rain, don't you think?
Yeah.
All right. It's like rain. All right. Anyway, that's it. That's going to do it. I hope you all have a great week. Again, happy holidays for those, and we'll see you back next week. We'll do it all again. Have a good week, everybody, and bye-bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VogNetwork, but you know they were all still true.